Welcome to the Rise Method podcast, where we make fitness information available to everyone. I'm Steve. Let's jump in.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Rise Method podcast. This week is a very special week for everyone who is participating in the BTC, the Body Transformation Challenge. We're in week 7, and we are officially over halfway in the 12-week Body Transformation Challenge. So at this time of the challenge, or I guess within your fitness journey, it's a really great time to reflect on your fitness journey. Reflect on the reason why you started this. Reflect on things that are working, things that might not be working, where you can improve on, and then making notes on what things have been going really well so that you can repeat them over time. Okay, so take a moment to reflect. Consider what has been successful and consider things that you would like to improve next time. Now, when we're thinking about our journey, it's often a good time to go all the way to the very start. You know, why did you want to be involved in fitness? Why did you want to improve yourself? Why did you want to improve your health? Why did you want to lose weight? Why did you want to build muscle? Why do you want to go to the gym? You know, what's your reason why? And we can sit there and complete tasks like the five whys, where you just ask yourself why over again. You know, I want to lose weight. Why? Oh, I want to feel better in my body. Why? Well, you know, I'm not happy in the way I'm feeling right now. I'm not able to keep up with my kids. I'm not able to go for walks with my friends like I used to. You know, why is that? Oh, well, you know, I'm not fit. So as you keep going through the whys, what actually happens is you get to a point where you start thinking about your own status within society broadly. Okay, so for the most of us, the reasons why we're trying to be involved in fitness, why we're trying to lose weight, build muscle, get healthy, whatever it is, it's because we're trying to improve our status. So if you had better fitness, you would be of a higher status. If you had better health, you'd be of a higher status. If you lost some weight and you you know, looked good or felt confident and felt good in your skin, you'd have a higher status. So for most of us, we get to a point where deep in our core, we go, well, I'm doing this thing to improve my status. And that can be a liberating experience where you go, well, yeah, geez, I'm not doing it because for someone else. I'm doing it for me. I'm not doing it because I think it's what I'm meant to do. I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it to better myself, and I'm doing it for my own gains, to improve my status around my environment. Okay, so once we have that liberating moment of, well, yeah, I'm doing it for me, I'm doing it to improve my status, we go that next step deeper and you go, well, you know, what's drawing you into this thing? Like, you know, if you want to improve your status, like, what, why is that important right now? Okay, and when we go to that next step in figuring out our, you know, reason why at the very start of it, and we've gone through the process of understanding our status, we can start really thinking about pain. Okay, so we're at this stage of, instead of improving ourselves to achieve an outcome, we're improving ourselves to move away from pain. So when you think about your reason why, your improvement of status, where you go, well, I want to be able to play with my kids, or I am overweight and I'm at a point where I can't even put my own shoes on. That's too tiring for me. So to improve your status, you want to be able to do these tasks so that you are higher, right? But then what pain are you avoiding? Yeah. So if you want to play with your kids, the pain that you're avoiding is not being able to play with your kids. The pain that you're avoiding is missing out on being able to do those activities such as playing with your kids, right? The pain that you're avoiding might be a physical pain, it might be an emotional pain, a mental pain, a community pain, a social pain. So think about what pain are you trying to avoid, right? And what this funnels us down into, where we're, you know, considering our why, how does it relate to our status, what pain are we ultimately trying to avoid, then we think about change and we go, well, what am I ultimately trying to change? So if we're trying to lose weight, most of us know that, hey, you probably need to eat better quality food, or, you know, eat less food than what you're currently eating. And you probably need to do some more physical activity. That could be more walking, going to the gym. So it is really those two levers that we're pulling. Most of us know what we need to do. The question is, why are you not doing those things? you might have a really altruistic reason where you go, well, yeah, I want to play with my kids. I want to lose weight so I can live longer and I can be there for everyone, right? But what pain are you avoiding? The pain physically and the pain emotionally, the pain mentally, you're trying to avoid those pains. But then the pain associated with change has its own pain points. So eating different foods can be painful, right? It takes effort, time, skill. You know, you're changing your habits, your routines. These are uncomfortable experiences. It has an element of pain to it. Same as going to the gym, finding time, the skill involved, what to do, the physical effort it takes to go to the gym and do exercise. They have an element of discomfort in a pain scale. So they also have pain. So you can then look at those two levers and you go, well, the pain to change is at one level and the pain of staying the same is another level. So if you are finding this time where you're not as motivated, you're not as excited, your reason why is there, but it's just not pulling you into the gym, it's not pulling you to eat better foods, it's not driving you to do these things, think about the pain that you are trying to move away from and then the pain it takes right now to change. Right. So if the pain to change is higher than the pain of staying the same, you're not going to change. You're not going to change. So if the pain of, you know, scheduling a time to go to the gym, do your workout, you know, get hot and bothered and sweaty, experience some DOMS, maybe physical DOMS and all the other kinds of pain that comes along with training, plus changing your lifestyle so that you're not having wine on the weekend and burgers with the boys and ice cream in the evening and chocolate when you're stressed out, if the pain of making those changes is higher than the pain of staying, you know, overweight, deconditioned, unfit, not able to touch your toes, not able to play with your kids, not able to go for hikes or play sports or anything like that, then you're not going to make those changes. So we can then go deeper and go, well, how could I modify the pain to change? Can I make it easier? So instead of going to the gym and training at a 10 out of 10, could I train at an 8 out of 10? It's not as painful. Is there ways that I can make meal prep easier? Could I, you know, just maybe pay for pre-packaged meals or pre-made meals or pre-meals that are done for me? Yeah, you pay the premium, but it's easier. It's less painful, right? Is there ways that I can get more steps in throughout the day without physically scheduling time to go for a walk? Is there ways that I can reduce my energy intake by not having snacks in the house where I'm tempted to have those snacks? Is there ways that you can make it easier to do the thing so that the pain of change then decreases? Then, is a fun activity for you. You can face the pain of staying the same. So if you are uncomfortable at looking at yourself in the mirror, you're overweight, deconditioned, unfit, unhealthy, that's a painful experience. But if you lent into that pain and you looked at yourself every day in the mirror and it becomes more and more painful every day, the pain of staying the same increases. So when you look at those two metrics of the pain of staying the same versus the pain of changing, it really tips the scale. You go, well, geez, this is really painful to stay the way that I am right now. It is going to be easier to do this other painful activity. So this is a long-winded way of reflecting. Number one, figure out why you started this damn thing anyway. Number two, how does it affect your status? What are you trying to improve? And that's okay. Once we acknowledge it, paste it on the wall, we go, well, yeah, this is what I'm ultimately trying to achieve, right? Then consider, what is your pain? What are you moving away from? Finding out what is painful right now versus what is painful to change. So the pain of staying the same versus the pain of change. And then are you able to modify those variables so that you can drive your behavior so you can ultimately get the reward that you want at the end, which is getting fit, getting healthy, getting lean, getting ripped, building muscle, insert whatever your reason why is, your goal, your outcome, and we'll get you there. But on a bit of a flick, let's talk about the Rise Method right now. Let's talk about the leaderboards in the Rise Method and the exciting time that we just concluded the 2-week Easter Shred. So we just wrapped up the very first ever 2-week Easter Shred, and it was really great success. We have lots of participants, lots of great results and lots of workouts completed over that 2 week period. It was a free program run starting on the Easter Monday, and because of its success, we will more than likely be running it again. So we will probably time it to be the midpoint of the next challenge. So the next challenge starts on the 10th of June. So that's King's birthday. And we will most likely be running a 2 week free shred program, very similar to the Easter shred, maybe giving it a name linked to something with the monarchy or something. We'll figure out something fun there. And yeah, we'll be open up to everybody, everyone's involved. So what we have for the Easter shred is we have three winners, and those three winners were drawn randomly out of those who completed the Easter shred. Now, we had about 10% of participants complete the challenge, so it was quite a challenging challenge, which is great because it matches the word challenge. So out of the about 39, 40 people who completed the Easter shred challenge, we have three winners. These three individuals were picked randomly out of a hat, and that goes out to Michelle Thompson, Beck Threfall, and Jolene Cooper. So congratulations to those three individuals. You have won yourself 12 weeks of platinum membership and also a Rise Method merch pack, which is in the mail right now. We also have a winner of the Refer a Friend competitions. That's Tony Sudale. So Tony referred, I think it was three, maybe even four people to that Easter Shred Challenge. And Tony's won a very similar prize pack. So that's 12 weeks of platinum membership plus a merch pack going out to Tony. Now, Tony was a platinum member, so he now has the next 12 weeks of free access to the app, which saved him about $300. So congratulations to Tony. Thank you for referring your friends to the Easter Shred Challenge. And again, we'll be running a very similar program probably in about 12 weeks from now, about that midpoint of the next challenge. Now, talking about our leaderboards, we have three leaderboards on the Rise Method app. We have the nutrition leaderboard, where you get 1 point for every day that you meet your nutrition goals. So far, recording this on the 18th of April, we have three people in first place. We have Jennifer Nizici, Joanne Hill, and Catherine Breyers, who are all on 18 points. So they have not missed a day of their nutrition goals so far. Congratulations. Next, we have our personal bests leaderboard. So you get 1 point for every personal best that you make on the Rise Method app. And in first place, we have Michelle Lennon on 75 points, Sarah Pepper on 69 points, and Jolene Cooper on 56 points. And then we have the workouts leaderboard. Now, the workout leaderboard, you get 1 point for every cardio activity that you log into the Rise Method app, and you get 2 points for every workout that you complete on the Rise Method app. So first place, again, we have Jennifer Nizicki on 187 points, Vanessa Lonsdale on 147 points, and Sarah Pepper on 105 points. So Jennifer, quite far ahead on 187 points. So congratulations, Jennifer, being really active on the Rise Method app, logging lots of cardio sessions and lots of workouts. We have a very exclusive Platinum Summit. Now, the Platinum Summit is a combination of all the leaderboards. So you get 1 point for every day that you meet your nutrition, 2 points for every day you meet your nutrition goal, 2 points for every personal best, 2 points for every workout, and 1 point for every cardio session. So we have a system where once you earn 500 points, you reach the top of the mountain, you rise to the top, you summit the mountain, and then those who complete the summit go in the running to win one of five $100 FPOS Visa gift cards. So we have three risers who have risen to the top, and they are Catherine Breyers, Jennifer Nizicki, and Jennifer Evans. So those three individuals who have completed the Platinum Summit already, are still another 6 weeks of the summit remaining. So lots of time for our other Platinum members to rise to the top. So congratulations to everyone who is part of our leaderboard process, who is won our Easter Shred Challenge, and of course, referring the most friends to our program. Now, each month, our leaderboard resets. And there's no prize associated with leaderboards or anything like that. Maybe you just get bragging rights if you in the top. But it's a great way to keep yourself accountable and motivated. And your goal might not be to be in first place or in the top three. You may have a goal that you want to finish in the top 50 in that particular month, or maybe in the top 10 in that particular month. And that might drive you to try to push yourself into that next bracket. So use leaderboards, keep yourself on track. Now, I have a couple of questions here that I'd like to answer coming up through the Rise Method app, the Rise community, and also in the extended communities that I'm involved in. So the first question here came from a student of mine. So I'm currently teaching Cert 3 and 4 in fitness, and this student came up to me at the end of the class, and he says, oh, you know, how much volume do you do on your legs? Okay, interesting question. So I spoke to him a little bit about my program. And then he goes, well, I'm just wanted to make sure that I was doing enough volume for my lower body because I'm not seeing any growth. Okay, so that led into a deeper question. I'm like, well, like how are you measuring your growth? Like, what does that mean? And he started to show me some before and after photos of his little quad flex. And he's like, oh, you know, I'm just not seeing any difference in my quads here, you know, before and after. These are about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks apart. Okay, so that kind of led us into a broader question of, you know, how do we actually measure muscle growth? Okay, so interesting conversation, muscle growth. How do we measure it? So the most limiting way to measure muscle growth is actually through photos, yeah? So especially on a short time horizon, 2-3 weeks, it's really difficult to compare muscle growth from photo to photo. Most of the differences in photos come to lighting, location, maybe the element of pump or swelling, and then also the, you know, proximity you are to any like reflective surface. So if you are taking a photo in a mirror, if you're really close to the mirror, really far in the mirror, it's going to be different. And then the pose, of course, you do. So if you are posing and you place a leg forward or a leg back, it's going to change the way that, you know, your leg looks, or insert any body part, the different flex or pose you do is going to be different. So it's very challenging to compare progress from photos, especially in a short time horizon. Maybe if you were to zoom out, like, you know, 6-12 months, you might be able to visibly see big changes. So let's say you are wanting to get bigger legs or bigger arms or bigger back, whatever it is. If you were having just more candid photos of yourself and you were just to compare, you know, the size of your arms from photo to photo, it might be a really stark difference in those images. Okay, great. Perfect over maybe like 6 monthly or annually. Great way to measure progress. Okay, photos. Next, some people look at girth. So using measuring tapes, and let's wrap it around my quads or my arms, and let's see if there is bigger size. We face same problems. So muscle, really hydrating tissue. The more hydrated you are, the bigger it's going to be. And those hydrating factors are manipulated by things like, you know, creatine, how much carbohydrate you've had, meaning glycogen storage inside the muscle belly, plus any swelling that's local to that muscle tissue. So these factors combined can change the girth of your quads. Plus, if you've got something like the pump or you've trained recently, you know, that's going to change as well. So if you are measuring progress by girth, that's going to be challenging. Plus, you need to think in muscle growth terms. So if you are measuring your quad at, let's say, 50 centimeters in diameter, so around the quad, how much growth are you expecting? Like going from 50 to 51 centimeters, that's quite a large increase that reflects, you know, maybe 2% growth. So are you then making the claim that your quads are grown 2% by measuring just 1 centimeter in growth? And then on a measuring tape, like how are you actually quantifying growth? Is it in half centimeters, centimeters, millimeters, fractions of millimeters? So these measuring elements can play a part in you determining if you are growing or not. Finally, you need to be able to repeat the girth process. So you need to find a way to measure your quads that it is uniform over and over again in the same spot. So often with measuring tapes, they might be on slight angles, slight crooks and bends in them. So you would need to find a way to uniform that measuring process over and over again. There's some really cool apps that were spoken about on the Rise Method app, such as the My 360 app, where it uses your phone camera to kind of take a silhouette almost of you, and then it's able to predict your girth. And of course, there'll be error rates involved in that, but there's a way to uniform those error rates. So if you're using a camera, that might limit the amount of extraneous variables in measuring your girth so that you can repeat it over time. So even if it has some slight error rates in that technology, there's more consistency in those errors. So there's an overall consistency in the data. So we're talking about photos, spoken about girth. Next, we need to consider things like the fact that if we are growing muscle, we are adding tissue to our body. So if I have, a quadricep that's the size of my fist, and then I want more muscle to that, I'm getting a bigger fist over time. So I need to be actually adding tissue to my body. So that then results in a net increase in my body weight. So some folks would measure muscle growth directly on the scales and they go, well, I've gained 5 kilos or 10 kilos, therefore I must have gained 5 or 10 kilos in muscle. And that does have some truth in it, especially in a longer time horizon, but that's also relative to any body fat that you might be gaining at the same time. So if you are going through a muscle growth phase, you would need to have a surplus in energy or calories or resources so that your body can be in the best position to build muscle. You can, of course, build muscle, gain muscle when you are at maintenance calories or even in a calorie deficit, depending primarily on your training experience. So if you are very new to lifting weights, you will gain muscle just from looking at a dumbbell. but if you are more advanced, let's talk 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years of strength training experience, it will be really difficult to continue to see muscle growth in an energy deficit because you kind of maxed out any like beginner gains that you might achieve. So the most optimal environment to continue to see muscle growth is in a energy or resource plentiful zone, right? So where you have lots of calories, lots of protein, so there's lots of resources so you can build muscle. So we need to be adding to our musculature. So because we're in a calorie surplus, when we're in these zones of muscle growth, that also is in a point where we could be gaining body fat as well. And it's totally fine. We're all adults and we know that sometimes to see progress and see change, we need to make a small sacrifice. So when we are building muscle, we would gain a small amount of body fat, but that's really easily lost as you transition into a weight loss phase again. So seeing linear correlations in muscle growth, especially in the short term, it does depend on the numbers that we're looking at. So in conservative views, we would want to be gaining maybe 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per month if we are in a muscle gaining phase. Anything greater than 1% of your body weight per month can suggest that we're gaining a little bit more than muscle. So if you are gaining 2-3% of your body weight in a particular month, there's a chance that that is more likely body fat than muscle. And then if you are gaining less than 0.5% of your body weight in any given month, that might suggest that your progress is too small to detect, and that you might want a larger calorie surplus and then to review your training strategy so that you can continue to see growth because the change in your body weight just isn't detectable. So we want to see some weight gain, but if we're going to try to determine your quads, it's hard because you go, well, I've gained 0.5% of my body weight. I'm 100 kilos. I've gained 500 grams this month. How do I know that it's in my quad? Okay. So this leads us to probably the best way to determine muscle growth, and that is through your training history. So what we want to see over time is that you're able to do more volume, more sets, more reps, more weight on quadricep dominant exercises over time. So let's say in week one, you're able to do 100 kilos for 10 reps. If by week four, you're able to do 110 kilos for 10 reps, then you can be more confident that muscle growth is occurring. You're able to do more volume, as in weight. That also means reps. It also means sets. You're able to do more on your quadriceps over time because it's unreasonable to expect that your muscle size stays the same, but then you're able to do more. Maybe if you're a beginner, you might see some neurological gains, so lots of nervous system gains, where your muscles are able to contract better and time better. Maybe over time, if you are practicing a new exercise, you might become more skilled at that exercise. So let's say you haven't squatted in a long time. Maybe over the course of week 1, 2, 3, you just get better at squats, regardless on the actual muscle usage of it. So you might see some improvements there. But chronically over time, if you are able to do more of more exercise in that muscle group, then you could be more confident that muscle growth is occurring. Now, that's not limited just to one exercise. So let's use quads as an example. If your program, let's say you're doing an upper lower split, on a given week, you've got squats, you've got leg presses, you've got lunges, and you've got leg extensions, right? So that's kind of four different quad exercises. If you're able to progress in the squats, but then not on the leg press, lunge, or the leg extension, then over time, you're not seeing just steady improvements in your quad growth or your quad performance. So you can't be as confident that your quads are growing. But if you're seeing across all four that you're able to do more squats, more leg presses, more leg extensions, more lunges over time, I'm talking over, 2, 4, 6, 8 weeks, then you can be more confident that, hey, muscle growth is occurring here because I'm able to do more. A nice way that I like to think about it is instead of focusing on your PBs or your maxes, like your one rep max, consider something like your one rep minimum. What is the minimum that you could do on any given day? Take myself as an example. So I'm recently, maybe the last 3 months or so, been trying to focus on building my upper body. So I've been doing slightly less volume on my legs and slightly more volume on my shoulders, my biceps, my triceps, my upper body, right? Just so I can build out parts of my body so I'm a bit more balanced. Now, the bicep curl is an exercise that I've never really cared much for. I do the exercise, it's popular, people do it, sure. But it's something that I haven't cared much for. So I would often grab 5 kilo dumbbells, complete repetitions, let's say 20 to 30 repetitions of a bicep curl, great, bit of a bicep pump and away I go. That was kind of like the floor of my training. On any given day, I could easily grab 5 kilos and bust out a bunch of reps. Over the last couple of months, I've now progressed up until 10 kilos. So any given day, I can grab the 10 kilos and do anywhere from 15 to 25 reps at that weight. So it might not be directly comparable to 5 kilos, but my minimum is now at 10 kilos. Any given day, I can grab those and start doing bicep curls. So I can be more confident that I've experienced growth in my bicep muscle than if I was trying to use other ways to measure it. So if I was using photos of my arms or girth measurements of my arms or trying to measure my body weight, those things might be fluctuating and not clear. But if I'm consistently able to do more on my biceps from month to month across lots of different bicep exercises with more weight, more reps, more control, more of a pump, more fatigue involved in those muscles, great, ticking all the boxes for muscle growth to be confidently occurring. So if you're in this position where you're like, well, I just don't know if I'm building muscle, look towards your logbooks. Look towards the notes that you're taking to track your progress. Are you seeing general improvements in your training? Are you able to do more? And what is the minimum that you could do on any given exercise, right? So, or any given day is a better way. So let's take a squat, for example. Regardless of if you're tired, fatigued, poor night's sleep, stressed out for the kids, whatever it is, on any given day, what's the minimum that you could squat and feel confident about that? That might be a better way to measure muscle growth than what is your PB, what is your max, okay? So muscle growth, tricky area to measure. Look at your logbook, you probably find all the answers there. Next question here was a bit of a long-winded question from a Rise Method member on our app. And the crux of the question was that this individual had very little motivation, especially towards the end of the day. So they would say things like, I'm not feeling motivated right now. I think I've lost my mojo. I've fallen off the wagon. I'm finding that at the end of the day, after work, I've just got no motivation to go and train. And what I said to this individual was, I'm the same. At the end of the day, I have no motivation to train. Heck, I have very little motivation at any given time to go and do things, especially training. I love training. I enjoy training, but I'm not motivated to train. Like right now, it's not that I've got an itch in me. I want to go and train. I now look at training in a different way, where I look at training just like I would look at, brushing my teeth, where I don't think about it too much. It's something that I do and I need to do just for my health, regardless on if I'm super motivated and if I'm brushing my teeth and I'm really focused on getting every little nook and crevice in my teeth and flossing and mouthwash and all the things. That might be one day. The other day, I might have a kid pulling at my leg because he wants to go outside. He's like, hurry up, dad. And I just got to quickly brush my teeth and away I go. Or maybe another time I'm distracted because the cat is, I'm coughing up a hairball or something random, and I just need to go. So sometimes I'm distracted, sometimes I'm, tired and I don't want to brush my teeth, but I just do it. I'm not motivated to do it. And that's the same as how I approach my training. But what I do have is a bit of a funneling system to make me go and train, where once I determine, all right, this is a time for me to train, I would do a system of activities. So I'll probably, have something to eat, take some pre-workout, go to the toilet, put your hoodie on and go to the garage. And that's just like a sequence of events. And I found myself in the gym. So you might have a sequence of events to get you in the gym, but the problem might be that you're just tired. You're just fatigued. You're just depleted. And this is what happened to this individual, where they were continuously saying things like, oh, I'm just after work, I'm tired, I'm fatigued, I just got no motivation, I can't be bothered doing it. And this is a driving force of motivation. And think of motivation, or even just like willpower, or even just discipline, as like a battery. It's like a fuel tank. It's got a finite level of effort involved into it. So if you've spent your day, at work, in and out of meetings, stressing about life and your career and your kids and your finances, whatever it is, all these decisions deplete our mental energy, the resource that we have. So when it comes to those times where we need to put our foot on the gas and go and do something like a workout, everything's depleted. Of course it is. And there's even some really interesting studies where we looked at we had two groups. One group was given a mental puzzle to complete, and the other group was given, I think, like just a bit of paper to read or something like that. So what the two groups was trying to replicate was, one group was a mentally challenging and stimulating task, and the other one was just reading or something to the lack of that. And then both groups were moved into a new room where they were presented things like cookies. And there was a significant difference with those who were completed the puzzle, who were mentally exhausted, mentally fatigued, and then choosing to have a cookie, versus those who were not mentally depleted and then having the willpower to avoid those cookies. So what we can extrapolate from these types of studies, and there's been a few ways that's been replicated, is that if you are mentally exhausted from the day, you've had a big day, you're at work, you've been in and out of meetings and stressed about life and all the things, once you get home, you're more likely to make poor choices, or choices that are outside of your goals. And then of course, things like going and training in the gym, you're not gonna be motivated or excited to do those activities. So it's a no-brainer. So what we can do to solve this problem is we can find ways to reduce the decisions that you make throughout the day. So everything from the decisions on what to eat, the time that you wake up, the clothes that you wear, all these choices, you can find ways to streamline them to make them easier. There's less choices to make throughout the day so that you have more mental willpower to go and do these things. Next, it might be worth reflecting at places like your work and go, well, can I change this environment at all? Is there someone I could speak to, being like, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, do I need some time off? Do I need an outlet? Do I need something where I'm not as exhausted by the end of the day, so that I might have more willpower to go do these activities? So a couple ways to think about it. One, how exhausted are you mentally? And does that drive your decisions to go and do things like go to the gym? Next, how are you viewing that workout? You know, is it something that's really high effort, high exhausting task? Like, I'm going to go train 10 out of 10. I need to get the sweat, the burn, the pump, all the things. Or do you just treat it like something like I'm brushing my teeth? I just go and do it. If I'm tired, if I'm stressed and fatigued, I just go and do it. Because, you know, a 5 out of 10 effort is still better than a 0 out of 10 effort, right? And then finally, what funnels do you have in place to get you into the gym? So do you have a set routine that once you start, you find yourself in the gym? So let's say you get home. If you get home and you stay in your work clothes and then you find yourself sitting on the couch watching TV, of course, it's going to be 9 o'clock before you know it. And then it's like, all right, I'm going to get ready for bed. But if you have a routine where you get home and you change into some workout clothes, some active wear clothes, and then you have a routine, maybe not dissimilar to mine, you get into this workout clothes, you have something to eat, you maybe pre-workout might be hard if you're getting home at like 5 or 6 o'clock at night, but maybe you have some sort of drink, maybe it has a certain taste to it that kind of like stimulates your senses to be like, all right, I'm going to do this thing. You know, go to the toilet, get in the car, go to the gym. That might be a sequence of events that you bang, 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 and away you go, you find yourself in the gym. I guess for me, fortunate that my gym is in my garage, so it's a very quick process. You know, that whole sequence might be 10 minutes, blah, 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 I'm in the gym. But what funnels do you have to get you there? Final question here, team, is about the bench press. I had a question come up talking about the arch of the bench press and do I need to do the arch? Okay, now, the answer, of course, is it depends, but I would make a rationale that for most of us, you'd benefit from some sort of arch. So what is the arch? The arch is when you are laying on the bench and you are extending through your spine to create that arch on the bench. And that arch can help us to kind of pin down the shoulder blades a little bit, get our shoulders in a nice position, and it also creates a nice stable place for us to push. Because remember, stability is what drives power. Imagine like you're standing on one leg and you try to push someone over, you're not gonna be able to create much force. But if you kind of get into this kind of like rugby stance and you go to push someone, you'll be able to generate more force. So that might represent stability in, you know, single leg balancing. It's unstable, instable. And then, you know, if you're in that like kind of like hunched over rugby like stance, or maybe like NFL, like American football style, like, you know, that type of stance, you want to create more force. So we can translate that over into something like the bench press. So if you just flat on the bench, you might be able to roll, might be moving, rolling, moving around. But if you create that arch a little bit in architecture, you can see arches in bridges and strong buildings. So we can create something like that to create a strong, stable position to push, right? Now, the arch isn't just all coming from the low back. A lot of it's coming from like that upper back area. So through that thoracic spine. So if you are doing an arch and you're getting a sore low back, or you're just not feeling it the same way, you want to think about getting the arch in the upper back, and you should be in a position where you're almost like puffing out your chest and almost reaching that chest to the sky. So that's the idea. We're trying to, you know, really puff out the chest, make our chest really wide and big puff out, and almost reaching it to the sky. So that's the idea. Now, if you wanted to move the most weight possible, you would want to do an arch so that you are reducing the range of motion of the bench press. So if you complete the arch, even with your arms straight, you're lowering the barbell down to your chest, it's a shorter range of motion than if you were flat on the bench, okay? So you'll find powerlifters would have a really exaggerated arch so that they just need to move the barbell in a shorter range of motion, okay? So that's one benefit of having the arch, is that you could lift more because it's a shorter range of motion. Of course, you are more stable, so you're able to generate more force, plus you're able to get your upper back and shoulder blades in a nice position where you're able to draw the shoulder blades down towards like your hips, so that the pecs are in a really prime position to press. Now, if your goals are more building muscle, which most of us, our goal is to build muscle, even if your goal is weight loss, we're trying to maintain as much muscle as we can. Some element of an arch, maybe not a hyper exaggerated arch like you would see in powerlifting, but some arch, one, creates a more stable position, two, creates a nice position for the shoulders to press, but three, actually it pre-stretches the pecs. So when you are in this arch, maybe you do this now while you're listening to this, if you were to really puff out your chest, almost like a bit of a pigeon or a peacock, right? Like a bird, you puff out your chest, make your chest really wide, really proud, you start to stretch your pecs, right? So imagine that position on that bench press, your pecs are already pre-stretched. So as you lower that barbell down, your pecs are in this really nice stretch position at the very bottom. And it accentuates that, you know, mid-range to stretch position. You might not be able to get a complete full stretch because the bar would hit your chest and you won't be able to get any lower. That's where dumbbells might become helpful. But that pre-stretch position can help to find a nice overload stimulus onto the pec so that you can execute that nice bench press, loading through the pecs. And when you finish the bench press with a bit of an arch, might experience the pump for the first time in the pec, or maybe a little bit of a contraction in the pec, and maybe even a bit of a cramp in that pec once you finished it. And then you might even experience a bit of what we call perturbation, where you are unable to contract that pec to the optimal way. So you might finish your bench press and you go to have a drink and you're like, oh Jesus, I just can't bring that bottle towards my mouth because the pec actually experiences some tension for the first time. So if you're not already, think about adding an arch to your bench press. It doesn't need to be massive and it doesn't need to be a bit of a contortion and light setup, but a really easy way to get an arch into your bench press is to think about puffing out your chest. So as you're setting yourself up, really get a really big, proud puff out of the chest, almost like you're taking a big, deep breath in, and then complete that press. A really nice cue that I like to think about is as I'm lowering the dumbbell down towards my pec and towards my chest, I'm trying to lift my chest up to meet the barbell. So instead of bringing the barbell down to my chest, I'm trying to bring the barbell down and get my chest to meet the barbell. Okay, so that might be a nice way to think about it, where you're lifting your chest up as you're lowering it down, which also adds a layer of control to it, because if you are focusing on some of these things, you're not just dropping the barbell down aggressively to your chest and relying on the bounce off your chest to press. We start to get a nice controlled descent of that barbell, a nice touch on the chest, and then a nice big press. So yeah, I would say for most of us, a bit of an arch would be beneficial in the bench press or in some and most pressing activities like dumbbell bench press, incline presses, and those types of activities. There you go, team. Let's wrap it up there for this special episode of the Rise Method podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, let me know, and I'll catch you in the next one. See you guys.